This is the 12 Songs of Christmas. I'm Alex Rawls, and Christmas is less than 2 weeks away. It seems inconceivable, but there you are. Today, I'm talking to Ryan Guldamond of the Canadian rock group Mother Mother. But before we get there, I've got a lot of Christmas content I haven't got around to this season. Earlier this year, I interviewed Sarah Noel, who has recorded a number of ambient folk Christmas tracks. I'll put a link to that episode in the show notes. And just beginning of December, she released two more, a new song titled Winter's Glow and a cover of I'll Be Home for Christmas. Winter's Glow steers into the ambient, seemingly shimmering in your ear, while her voice and the electronic touches associated with it sometimes sound like they might actually just be the wind blowing snow around outside. It's a lovely, calming moment with a melody that locks in with each listen. Keep that in mind when you listen. It certainly is what I hear. Anyway, this is Winter's Glow, new from Sarah Noel. Another release I waited on is My Morning Jacket's Happy Holiday. It first came out as a digital release in 2013, and then it was reissued this year on vinyl with a couple of new tracks on National Record Store Day. I didn't get on it right away because we were trying to get an interview together for the pod, but couldn't get our schedules to sync up this year. I'll keep trying, but the good thing is that if you're up for a My Morning Jacket Christmas album, they give you what you want. I always find them a little earnest, but they pick songs that can carry that. Songs like the band's Christmas Must Be Tonight and Dr. Dog's Oh My Christmas Tree. With the pedal steel in the background, the unhurried tempos, Happy Holiday often sounds tailor-made for the end of the evening. So much so that the new lead track, Feeling Sorry, stands out simply because it's 5 to 10 beats per minute faster, and the saxophone and stacked vocals add some cinematic touches and warm up the sound a little bit. This is Feeling Sorry from My Morning Jacket's Happy Holiday.
Feeling sorry for myself, wishing that something would change. Feeling sorry for myself on Christmas Day. Oh, why do the holidays always make me feel this way?
Last year, I interviewed British music journalist Kevin McGrath after the release of Have Yourself a Merry Indie Christmas, Volumes 1 and 2. This year he released Volume 3 with another 35 indie rock Christmas songs that expand the world of holiday music. Like the two before it, and really like most compilations, it's up and down. There are songs that are fine, but that I doubt I'll return to them again, and there are songs that are already now an indelible part of my Christmas. If you're a skeptic of guitar-based rock in the 2020s, much of what's here will only confirm your right to be suspicious. A lot of this sounds familiar, with not one, but two seasonal shout-outs to the Ramones. And the future head's Christmas Was Better in the 80s could serve as a thesis statement if it actually made that case. Still, good indie rock and pop has its charms, and it, for an EP as inexpensive as this, £5 or $6.50 American, it's easy to get in and find the stuff that works for you. From Have Yourself a Merry Indie Christmas, Volume 3, this is Merry Christmas, Joey Ramone by El Santo.
Merry Christmas, Joey Ramone! Merry Christmas, Joey Ramone! Merry Christmas, because you mean so much to me. Christmas, Joey Ramone. Merry Christmas, because you mean so much to me.
Now to Mother Mother. I'm never certain that hard rock and Christmas music work well together, but I leave the door open to that possibility. For me, rock's emphasis on power is at odds with the general mood set by the holiday, but I realize that its fans might simply process the volume, the intensity, and kind of the ambient darkness as their musical language, and that anything can be expressed in that language, including Christmas-related sentiments. Last year, Mother Mother released a new song, Cry Christmas, and a version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And their dark, sometimes angsty perspective and energy made them someone I wanted to talk to. How and why does a band like Mother Mother record Christmas music, which seems to come from such a different place? And does it really come from a different place? We get into some of that stuff. Mother Mother will have a new album due out next year, and right now they're trickling out the first releases to get people interested. We'll start with The Matrix from the upcoming album, and then we'll be back on the other side with Ryan Goldemann on the 12 Songs of Christmas. So to start, can you give listeners sort of the quick version of Mother Mother? What's the short story?
The short story, it's a long story at this point. We've been around for a while. We got together in 2005. Me and my sister are the founding members and started as a freak folk ensemble, which has over the years evolved into a fairly muscular indie alternative rock outfit. And we like quirky, clever, eccentric, catchy music. So we try to check those boxes in what we offer. We're a Canadian band and we're about to release our 9th LP. And next year, 2024, looks like probably our most robust year of touring to date. So it seems like things are only growing for us, and we're very grateful for that after having been at it for so long.
Yeah. So the new album is coming out when?
February 16th.
All right. And how long have you, I know... I've looked and seen a number of songs that have come out over the course of the last few months. There was a time where promotion for an album started when the album came out. It feels like these days promotion starts well in advance and the album release is almost like the end of a chapter of promotion. Is it strange to be working on sort of promoting a project that people can't quite hear yet?
Yeah. And it can be frustrating at times to have to put so much effort into teasing while you're still acquainting yourself with this new music, with this new energy, oftentimes producing and creating it. While simultaneously having to market it and only to, say goodbye just when you're ready for the world to say hello. It's strange how that is now the new model, but that is now the new model. And so we must adapt and we must find our avenues to be creative and innovative within that new formula. And guess what? It's going to change again at some point down the road. And that's just been the nature of the music industry and I guess the human race at large.
Yeah, it is. I wonder why, have you had the experience of having your understanding of the music that you've just finished change while you've been in the process of promoting it between, you know, as you go through this process?
Well, certainly the process of making a record, being in the studio, trying to unearth and identify the aura of the body of work and the deeper themes is a very amorphous and spontaneous event. And it is contradictory sometimes to fool yourself into thinking you know what it all means enough to advertise it while it's still giving birth to itself. I just find the creative process so of a mind of its own. And until the thing is really baked and done, you don't really know what it means.
Yeah. As kind of where I was going with this, because I've had the experience myself, I used to do more poetry than I do now. But there were times where I would be reading something a year after I wrote it. And it suddenly occurred to me, like while I'm standing there in front of people and I'm reading something, I'm realizing, I know why I wrote that. And what felt in the moment like the intuitive right choice revealed a year later why that intuitive choice made sense to me, because these thoughts connected and this, and it really is about this. And I would imagine in the process of trying to both live with the music and also try to talk about the music sort of in a piece by piece way as you're waiting for it to come out, that it would probably give you moments to sort of make connections that you didn't make while you were in the process of recording it.
Yeah, I feel like the meaning behind a lot of this stuff crystallizes over time. And often I derive more meaning through other people's interpretations. I try to like not be intellectual when I'm writing music. I just feel like there's a deeper wordless, thoughtless voice from the soul that is trying to find its way through the creative process. And the less I interfere by intellectualizing, the better. And I just get more joy out of discovering what it means to me through what it means to other people after it's been released, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, it was really interesting. Like, while I was preparing for this, looking, I find it really useful to look into the like YouTube comments just to see who's connecting and how they're connecting. And it was really fascinating to see the intensity with which people were connecting to your songs, and that it was very clear that there are, that you were saying things that people needed to hear or felt like, you know, that you'd read their diary, that you knew what was going on in their lives. That's got to be really gratifying, if occasionally disturbing.
Yeah. No, never disturbing. I think when people can commune through deep emotion, especially in the form of creativity, it's only ever a beautiful thing. It's a very bonding thing, and it breeds compassion and empathy and just connection with your fellow human, I find. And so it's only brought about a lot of light and positivity to my life, is going deep, going dark, getting emotional, letting that recycle in the form of songs, and then seeing other people have a similar experience is a beautiful thing.
We'll get to the record in just a moment, but one last thought as we're sort of getting into this, the pre-stuff. In the last couple of years that you found a new audience, or had your songs found a new life on TikTok, did that experience affect at all the music that you wrote after that?
Yeah, I think the music that connected with the TikTok audience was our earlier music, which born from its own naivety was very courageous and very eccentric and unconventional. And over the years, you know, you're trying to make it as a band, you're trying to streamline and refine yourself and become more focused. And in doing so, some of those more wily traits in composition fall away a bit. And it took a younger generation 13 years later to remind us that no, those traits are great. It's good to break the rules. It's good to bend and warp the traditional standards in songwriting. And so it just reminded us of who we were, where we came from, and empowered us to not try to recreate the past, but just to forge a new chapter with no boundaries, no limits, with utter freedom in the writing process.
Oh, that's cool. Good for you. That has to be in a career as long as you've had. It seems like you have to have moments to remind you why you're doing this, or to sort of refresh things so that it doesn't feel like a job.
Yeah, it's a funny job to have, because the best thing you can do for the work and for the arc of success is to not think about the work, or not think about the work as work, and not think about success. It's counterintuitive to how most people find their place in a business. You have to be very business oriented in most other businesses. But I think in order to succeed in the arts, you kind of need to reject business to a certain extent so that the art can thrive.
Right. So the most recent track that you've dropped from the upcoming album, does the upcoming album have a title yet, or has it been announced?
Yes. Yeah, and it has. It's called Grief Chapter.
Grief Chapter. And so the most recent release from it is The Matrix. What's the story behind that song?
The Matrix, it is an anthemic song, very damn the man, damn the system, live life on your own terms, break free of the script, and how a mantra can be a useful tool in doing that is basically the Coles notes.
A Canadian reference. So
is it?
I didn't realize until I got here. I got here and that nobody knew Cole's notes when I said that here either.
Oh, that's funny. Because I don't even know the etymology. We just say these phrases and without knowing where they come from.
I didn't realize at the time. It comes from the Cole's bookstore, a chain which I don't think exists anymore, and it definitely didn't exist in the States. So anyway.
Thank you for that tidbit.
Yeah. So, I found those, those kinds of books existed everywhere, but it's just, that was the Canadian version, and it was my experience growing up too. So, So in 2022, you released a couple of Christmas songs. And it's not immediately obvious from Mother Mother or talking to you that Christmas songs would be a thing you would do. We're going to get to why you did it, but what was your experience with Christmas music growing up?
Not overly sentimental. I could appreciate the strength in a lot of those melodies. They really get inside of your DNA, whether you're into Christmas or not. They're so ubiquitous. So I appreciate Christmas music. I think it's just so well-crafted, a lot of it. But yeah, not overly attached to it growing up.
Was there a time where you did? I'll tell you, I think about my experience that when I was young, like kids, that I did care for it. But there also came a point that as a teenager where I felt like Christmas music was the music I associated with mom and dad and families. And as a young punk rock, punk rock guy, that the music I loved existed to confront mom and dad's world. And so for a long time, Christmas music was something that I felt like my music was there to fight. And it wasn't until probably between 5 and 10 years later where I found my way into it again. Does any of that ring true to you or sound familiar?
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I can't really recall if I ever had that rejection of it. You certainly get pummeled by it during this time of year. and it's all wrapped up with consumerism. And so it's easy to dismiss Christmas music, whether or not you like the song unto the song. And I think I still go through that. And I went through that when being presented with the idea of doing Christmas music with the band, which I'm sure we can get into. But yeah, the proposition at first didn't appeal to me.
All right. I'm going to come back to that. But are there Christmas songs that you like better or like better than others?
I like O Holy Night. I like Silent Night. I like the nocturnal ones, apparently. Sugar Plum Fairy. Is that a Christmas song?
Yes, from Nutcracker Suite.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, all that music in the Nutcracker is pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know if this really counts as a Christmas song, but I like the Pogues, Christmas in New York. Great modern day, depressing, punky Christmas song.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. An old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song. You, I turned my face away and dreamed about you.
You said a moment ago that you were approached to do the song. Tell me about that. Tell me about it. Did that come from the record company, or did that come from someone else in your band?
I think most acts are asked by the label or the management or the team. And it's not like this sinister proposition. It's like, hey guys, like it's that time of year again. And you know, you do a Christmas cover, get on some playlists. It's good visibility. There's certainly a tone of strategy, right? And that doesn't totally appeal to me. And also just when I hear other bands doing Christmas music, you can just kind of smell the fact that they did Christmas songs to do Christmas songs, to get on the playlist, to adhere to the season and the holiday for their benefit, potentially, you know, like yeah. It all kind of smacks of that.
Sure. Yeah.
and I get it. Like there's, you know, there's a lot of that in the biz, and that's fine. It is a biz. But I didn't want it to feel like that when we did the Christmas music. And so one of the things I was really headstrong about was writing a Christmas song. Like, okay, you can write one for sure by all means, but where the weight is in covering a classic song. That's where you get the playlist. I'm like, fine, I don't really care about the playlist. We'll do a cover, but I'm more excited about writing an original Christmas song. And so that's what I set out to do. And, you know, I grew up with a beautiful, idiosyncratic, colorful, flawed family who I love dearly. But at Christmas time, you know, we all get a little weird and the energy's a little weird. And those Christmas dinners can border on dysfunctional here and there. And so I wanted to hyperbolize that experience and create this song that set the scene for a very dysfunctional Christmas dinner with a lot of disturbing family dynamic tendrils with outrageous characters starring the show. And so that's how it unfolded. And I, you know, I got really into that creative process. I fell in love with writing that song, and I fell in love with the song in its finished form. And I felt like it really embodied the mother spirit, that sardonic, cynical, clever, funny, depressing, while somehow being a little bit hopeful tone. So yeah, I'm really glad that I didn't just reject the invitation and instead kind of got in there and found a way to make it our own.
Degrading kids' table. The mistletoe says, nah, you don't need a kiss, you need divorce papers. The turkey's dry and grandpa's high on Oxycontin, pumpkin pie. Oh me, oh my, oh what a gong show. Ho, ho, ho.
Have you heard Robert Earl Keane's Welcome to the Family?
No, I don't think so.
It's an Americana song that does much the same thing that yours does. It's beautiful and it's become a classic. And in the Americana world, and it certainly bodes well. Because I was thinking immediately when I heard yours that I love that gesture and the details. Was it a different way of writing for you?
I think. I began writing more from the storytelling lens, less autobiographically. I mean, even though this did have an autobiographical quality, it was more about imagining characters and inventing a space and a narrative, which I think that's where I came from. And I really like that kind of writing when it's less like, woe is me, all about me. And it's more about fantastical events and characters. So maybe it was a bit of a return to self writing in this way.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I was just thinking the level of detail and the storytelling and the detail and care and sort of the quick ways in which you sort of create a lot of characters that we recognize very quickly as well. And I thought that was very interesting, and it felt like something that in my short time listening around at your library, I didn't think I'd heard that kind of writing exactly before.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, maybe there aren't as vivid characters in the other songs. I mean, like our big breakout, Hayloft, that song is about two young lovers, you know, having forbidden connections in a barn, and the sinister patriarchal father figure, he's a hick with a shotgun, and he hears something stirring in the barn, so he goes to investigate, and he finds his child with this lover, much to his disdain and disapproval, and ends up shooting one of them. And so, you know, that was fun to write, paint that story.
Sure.
With some vividness and people really connected to that. And so not that I tried to like recreate that with Cry Christmas, but I think that's in me. And I think I get a lot of joy out of just maybe the creative writing process as opposed to heart bleeding personal lyricism.
Yeah. Now you also covered Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Why choose that song?
I think, you know, it was like, okay, we got to do a cover and we're going to do an original. Let's just start listening to Christmas songs and see which one jumps out. And when I heard that one, it's just so saccharine and happy and major. And I was like, oh, if we just demented it and put it in a minor key, I think that would be great. I think that'd be really dark and act as a nice companion piece to Cry Christmas.
Was that what you was? Is it just the minor key? Is that the change? Because there's a definite dark undercurrent to your version, and it's in the music. It's not just in the vocal. Is it the switch to the minor, or is there anything else you're doing in there to kind of give it the sense of unease that I think is kind of crucial to that version?
Yeah, I found like a very atonal, twisted sounding music box at an antique store. And that's what you hear right away. And it just sounds like the music box is struggling to be pleasing, but utterly failing. You know, it's just a very unsettling sound. And there's something about nostalgic, happy music when it's put through a mangled filter that just like, it's hard to take.
Right.
And so it kind of begins like that. And then the piano motif is this old 100-year upright bell that's a little like out of tune and pretty quirky. So I think just those instrument elements add to the melancholy and the darkness, eeriness.
Yeah. I think it's the out of tune piano because I was hearing, because there's something in there that's, I mean, I know I've heard songs would drop to minor key and I know what it does.
An out of tune upright piano is a beautiful thing. And it's a great tragedy when people try to tune those pianos into perfection because their beauty is their wrongness.
Did working on this leave you open to returning to Christmas music at some point in the future?
Absolutely. But I just want to do it in this way again. You know, I just want to put more depressing, upsetting Christmas music out into the world. I think that would be very gratifying. And that is how I think we would feel authentic in this task.
Thanks to Ryan for the time and the talk. You can find Mother Mother's Holiday Music on the usual streaming services and in the digital marketplaces. Same for My Morning Jacket's Happy Holiday. You can find Sarah Noel's Winter's Glow and Have Yourself a Merry Indie Christmas Volume 3 at Bandcamp. I'm still giving away my 2023 Christmas mix free to listeners. Email me at alex@myspiltmilk.com and I'll shoot one over. You can also stream a 12 Songs of Christmas on Apple Music and Spotify. If you're asking yourself, why should I get the mix when I could just hit the playlist? Good question. And the answer, there are songs in there that don't stream. So if you want those, including some cool Japanese Christmas music, some cool indie Christmas music, you go for the mix. We'll wrap up with one more from Have Yourself a Merry Indie Christmas. This is Buzzard, 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 and it's glam-oriented. Christmas is coming. We all know the score. Talk to you next week.
Well, Merry Christmas time to every child in Jesus Christ. What an incredible sacrifice. We all